When we left off in episode 2, Fred Hoiberg and his staff had gone outside the box. They basically said no to a long rebuild at Iowa State. It just wasn't going to happen. The goal was not only to win, but to do it as soon as possible. They went the transfer route. However, due to those pesky NCAA transfer rules, that impressive quad of Royce White, Chris Allen, Anthony Booker, and Chris Babb, they had to sit out an entire year. Which begs the question, was that the greatest scout team in college basketball history? Welcome to CF Chronicles, Transfer U, Part 3.
CF Chronicles, Cyclone Fanatic Media's new podcast series, presents Transfer U, the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. Transfer U is brought to you by you, Cyclone Fanatic Patreon members. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product great. If you enjoy our content, please consider donating monthly today.
These are some of my favorite stories from the Hoiberg years. They revolve around that 2010-2011 scout team. It was epic. It was so epic, in fact, that watching those guys compete against the actual Cyclones that year, you know, the ones that you watched inside of Hilton Coliseum, that's what actually made things click for Hoiberg. It's what made him know he was doing something right.
Well, I remember when we were on to something is when I saw that first practice when that scout team, basically is what they were that season, was just absolutely kicking the guys that we had. They were just kicking their ass every day. And that's really when I found out that, you know, we're on to something here. And, you know, I saw those guys, you know, the chemistry that they were able to build on that year they were sitting out, was great. And obviously a lot of those guys coming from the types of programs that they did and the things that they were able to learn. You know, I had two Michigan State guys. I had, you know, a guy that played for Tubby and Royce. I had, obviously, Babb played at Penn State. And Anthony Booker, coming from Southern Illinois, where he played for Chris Lowry. I mean, those guys played for some really, really good coaches. So, you know, they had, you know, they were seasoned as far as, you know, getting to college and being away from home. They had that experience already under them. And the thing with transfers, especially with some of the guys that we took, is, you know, a few of them were, you know, it was their last opportunity. And, you know, you've got them a little bit that way to where, you know, they come in and those guys were great. They were great in the community. They were great, you know, obviously for what we were trying to do and what we were trying to build. And, you know, I look at that team and, you know, I guess Jake Anderson, you could look back, was the first guy that we had as a fifth year graduate transfer that really helped us compete. That first season as a 6'3 guy. I think he was third or fourth in the Big 12 in rebounding and really kind of a glue guy that helped us get off to a great start that year and overall have a 500 record, which I don't think Iowa State had, you know, in quite a while. And then we're able to build it with those guys we talked about earlier. And then just to continue to add, you know, I wanted to bring in four-year guys, which we were very fortunate to get some really good players with, obviously with Melvin being the first one. And then we get George, and then we get Monte and Matt Thomas and guys like that that just had unbelievable careers at Iowa State.
As Hoiberg points out, circumstances surrounding these transfers were greatly overlooked during Iowa State's climb to the top of the Big 12. These guys knew that if they didn't perform in Ames, their careers, in the United States at least, were basically over. That is a good way alone to get a strong personality's attention. Put up or shut up. That's where these transfers were when they arrived in Ames. Chris Babb elaborates, pointing out that this particular group of transfers viewed practices kind of like their own games, and it often made life difficult on others.
I mean, that was just our, like, to us, that was our game. You know, we spent a whole year not being able to play games, so when they tossed the ball up and said, you know, do your best, you know, that was like, to us, that was the game. And, you know, that was our chance to compete and, you know, really give the guys a good look. And so, you know, we gave it our best. You know what I mean? That was our chance to shine and, you know, off the cameras, off of, you know, ESPN and, you know. But, I mean, that was really – I think that was good for us as far as, you know, how big of competitors we were to kind of – you know, we had some battles, man. You know, we would – we would kill them some days, and some days they would turn around and kill us. And that kept it interesting for us most of the season.
Hoiberg's associate head coach at the time, TJ Otzelberger, along with Bobby Lutz, were vital in game planning that season. And remember, this was Hoiberg's first one. So Iowa State didn't go to the NCAA tournament that year with the guys on the floor. But these guys were working extensively with that scout team. Otzelberger's job was to get this group of guys to mimic future opponents to prepare the Cyclones in practice.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the two teams, really, how balanced it was day in and day out. And there's certain dynamics of how we played that following year that, you know, were things that, you know, with Royce with the ball in his hands wasn't something we were doing every day, you know, with that other group. But when you think about it, you think, you know, on one group in practice every day, you've got Deontay Garrett and Scott Christofferson and Jake Anderson and Melvin Edgem and Jamie Vanderbeeken and Calvin Gottfried, and you've got those six over there. And then on the other group, it's Babb and White and Booker and Chris Allen, and I'm trying to remember who else, but it made it really competitive. There were definitely days in practice where the scout team was every bit as good and then some with opponents we played even in the Big 12. And so I think, yes, it probably was, in terms of having guys sit out, probably more talent than anybody had ever had sit out in a season, for sure, and was something that was unique. And now you look across the board, and one that stands out is, you know, Kansas had a bunch of players sitting out this year. I don't know how many, if there's four or five or, you know, how many, but that was something that teams were afraid to have one guy or two guys, and it became more commonplace. So I do think that that scout team, you know, that year in that 2011 season was probably as strong of a group as anyone had had, certainly at that point in time, and maybe up to the present time of talent that was not playing every night. And it was, you know, made it challenging for coaching because you have all these guys, you're just thinking, man, if we could use them tonight, how good would we be?
I seriously can't get enough of the old scout team stories. Here's another good one from Hoiberg.
Yeah, I mean, you know, generally the scout team are walk-ons and, you know,
yeah.
You know, guys that decide to redshirt because they're not ready to play. But, you know, that year, you know, I remember a play, we were getting ready to play Iowa, actually, and, you know, Royce got a rebound and just brought the ball down the floor on his own and went behind the back to Chris Babb, who, you know, turned, skipped it across to the corner to Chris Allen, who hit a streaking Anthony Booker coming down the lane for, you know, a two-hand hammer. And, you know, those guys just made those plays where, you know, you'd like to get on your guys and say, what the hell are we doing? But then you just kind of lean back and say, wow, you know, it's going to be fun once these guys become eligible next year. And, you know, that, it was a really fun team. You know, Bobby Lutz was really in charge of most of our scouts that year. And, you know, he would be over there, and he did a great job of getting those guys all bought in. And, you know, if they weren't doing what they were supposed to do, we'd jump on them as, you know, I was getting ready, getting the guys ready that we're going to be playing in the games. But, you know, it was fun. That was a fun year to have those guys go up and compete, because that was, you know, I'll say the guy that had as good a year, you know, to help us. So I think we got up to, what were we, 13-1 maybe to start, or 13-2 getting out. We had a great win against Creighton at the, you know, in Des Moines at the arena there. And, you know, Deontay Garrett had an unbelievable season that year. Jamie Vanderbeeken had a very solid season. And Scott Christofferson had a good year. And then, you know, the other guys that were just coming along as freshmen were Melvin and Calvin Gottfried, and then Jake Anderson really is the sixth that we played, and Boo Boo a little bit as well. But, you know, it was fun. Those guys, you know, played well. I think exceeded, you know, some of the, you know, where some of the people thought. But we really only played six or seven guys that year. But then that scout team, you know, what they would do, they would just beat the hell out of those guys every day.
All those original transfers were interesting, but Royce White is a guy who really stood out. In episode two, we covered how it was a national recruiting victory for Iowa State when White decided to play ball in Ames. But it's Royce's larger-than-life personality, which is somewhat polarizing, that makes him deserve his own chapter. A lot of people say a lot of things about Royce. Some are true, some are not. But he was never called a bad teammate during his time at Iowa State, according to Babb.
Man, that guy is, and I can still confidently say this, like, that's one of the most top to bottom talented players that I've ever played with. And, you know, his confidence level was always high. You know, it was almost to a fault, because it was like he never seemed like he was taking the preparation serious, because it was just like, yo, we're like, do you know how good we are? Like, you know, like it was like he never feared anybody. He never backed down from anybody. We're going into battle with, you know, the number one seed of Kentucky, and it was just like, yo, like, this is another game. You know who we got? Like, to me, it was just awesome to watch, because I had never been around anybody like that before. And, like, for him to have that mindset and always back it up was, I mean, that's something special to see.
Nobody was closer with Royce than Iowa State assistant coach Matt Abdelmassi. And I asked him for some good Royce White scout team stories. It came down to one common theme with Royce.
The one thing about Royce is we knew how ridiculously talented it was. The year he sat out, our scout team was, if they wanted to, could beat the team that we had playing that year, eligible players. It was just a matter of whether they were all going to be on that day. We did have some interesting personalities to manage, Royce being probably the head of the snake to manage. Listen, when you sit out, there's days you're disinterested. You know you're not playing. You know you're really not doing much. I mean, yeah, you're helping the team prepare, but to call it how it is, that still doesn't replace the feeling of playing a game. So really the best Royce White story is in the 2 years he was with us was Texas A&M, first Big 12 road game. And this kid is literally throwing up all over the place on the bench because his nerves are just so high from and all wired up from the travel, and probably that it's his first road game. It's a road environment. And this kid's literally throwing up all over the place. And he goes out and has arguably, I think you could say, one of the best games in Iowa State history, and dominates. And we dominate at Texas A&M. And I think that's when everyone kind of looked around and knew that this could be something really special.
Nice pass from White to Gibson.
Boy, that was a beautiful pass. A backhanded bounce pass through the middle of the lane.
Look at that feed, man. Boy,
howdy. I'm telling you, Royce White has got vision of a point guard.
And another rebound. Someone tell me when Royce White gets to 10.
I'm telling you, Royce White has got vision. Maybe the best passer I've seen this season. What a basketball game.
There you go, Coach Geddes.
Triple-double for Royce White.
That is 18 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 points.
I just asked you before you came over, when's the last time you had a triple-double?
Summer League, this last past summer in the Cap City.
During that 2011-12 season, Royce led Iowa State in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks per game. And it surprised no one when, following Iowa State's second-round NCAA tournament loss to Kentucky, that's a game that Royce went 9-for-12 from the field in. He had 23 points, his 12th double-double of the season. Yeah, it didn't surprise anybody when the NBA was next on his radar.
Coach Hoiberg here, Jamie Pyler, David Harris, and all of Iowa State. You know, I appreciate, again, so much for giving me a second chance at basketball. Coach has become, more than a coach to me. He's like an idol and a friend, and his era is just beginning here at Iowa State. Also, I want to thank Doc Showman and Vic. You know, they did tremendous work with me this year through getting through some of my mental health issues. Bobby Matthews has always been a great resource for me, not only academically, but just in life in general. The Cyclone Alley, you know, they're the best student section anywhere. And a lot of media guys in this room, you guys allow me to, you know, express who I am away from the court and let people see another side of me. And, you know, last, I want to thank my teammates in the back. Without them, none of our success would have been possible. They're some of the best young men I've ever been around, and I mean that. You know, I love each and every one of them. And the same goes for, you know, our coaching staff and all the hardworking managers and GAs. All that being said, it's been decided, you know, by the people that I trust that, you know, becoming a professional is probably what's best. So I won't be returning next year to Iowa State. Again, you know, thank you to the Cyclone Nation and everybody who supported me in this journey.
With the 16th pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Houston Rockets select Royce White of Iowa State University.
Royce White, at least in terms of the way he plays at times stylistically, has been compared to Charles Barkley.
Royce White is big, strong, and he is unbelievably skilled. I mean, he's really like a point forward out on the floor. He can put the ball on the floor. Fred Hoiberg used him a lot at the elbows, and he's able to drive it. He can finish at the rim. He's not a particularly good shooter, but that's something I think he can improve upon. He needs to start making his free throws. But on the offensive end, you can play him all over the floor. I think the challenge for him, you can see the tremendous feel he's got as a passer. Led his team in assists, led him in steals, led him in scoring, and also led him in rebounding. And you see that body, he's like a linebacker out on the floor with an unbelievable feel for the game and terrific strength. On the defensive end may be the place where he may struggle a bit because I think on the perimeter he may have difficulty guarding, moving laterally, staying in front of a three, and maybe guarding inside against a four that can lock you down in the post. But offensively, you can move him all over the floor.
Here are the two picks the Rockets have made, Jeremy Lamb and Royce White. Royce White, who was spectacular in the NCAA tournament loss this year against Kentucky. Now, in his past, he started his career at Minnesota. Had a couple of scrapes with the law, wound up at Iowa State where he was completely incident-free, but there was also the issue of Royce White's not a big fan of flying either, and people wondered what impact that might have. What do you think of the Rockets taking him here?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't know what their team's going to look like in the future, but I really like Royce White. Obviously, I have to get over his flying issues, but he's a versatile player. He was one of the guys I enjoy watching the most in college basketball this season. So, look, point power forward, we kind of saw LeBron James playing that in the finals. He won't do it at that level, but maybe he can do it at a lower level.
I think the Chargers will cure his fear of flying. They're pretty nice.
Yeah, there's a little difference. No disrespect toward the team playing at Iowa State, but I don't think it's going to be like, it's like flying in your living room when you fly an NBA charter these days.
Yeah, but he's got an anxiety disorder. And he's been really upfront about it. He's actually been an inspiration to a lot of people that suffer from OCD and things like it. And it's something that he's going to have to overcome. And, you know, Houston had to satisfy themselves that wasn't going to be a problem going forward. And that's got to be key in this the decision.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg handled him extraordinarily well this past year, put together a great season, and now he goes to the Rockets in 6.
Royce White's confidence is legendary. So much so that it sometimes makes you scratch your head. That's especially the case if you don't know him, if you don't understand him. I interviewed Royce a few months before we made this podcast regarding his recent, most turbulent times as a pro in and outside of the United States. And we talked for well over an hour. I did want to focus on some positives, though. So I asked him, what would have happened had he returned to Ames for another season?
I'd go out on a limb and say I'd pick us to be a Final Four team for sure, and if not, win the championship. You know, I think that if we were able to sustain the momentum that we had in the beginning of the second half against Kentucky and go on to catalyze that and get out of that game, I think we had a pretty good chance of winning the national championship that year.
On the court, in the NBA at least, White's career never really took off. To this day, and he's 27 at the time of us recording this, White has only appeared in 3 NBA games. All of them were with Sacramento in the 2013-14 season. He's never scored a point in the world's top basketball league. White did have some success north of the border. He was named the MVP of the National Basketball League in Canada in 2017. A lot happened, and he was released from the club in 2018. White is nationally known for his polarizing approach to fighting for rights of people who are battling anxiety, and he set out on a crusade to change the process in which the NBA views mental health. White's believers view him as a trailblazer. I've heard the word martyr, even, for essentially giving up his career to pave the way for others. But retractors view Royce as nothing more than a loudmouth who's never interested in playing basketball to begin with. There's one thing that is consistent when you talk with Royce White, the Cyclone. That's that Iowa State never had any problems with him. I discussed this with the man who is with him more than anyone. Again, let's hear from Abdel Masih.
It seems like the one place where he really was happy and where he really excelled was at Iowa State, not only for 1 year, but the sit-out year, too. People forget he was there for 2 years.
Yeah.
Talk me through what that was like, and what did you guys do to make him comfortable? How did that work? How did he excel so well at Iowa State?
Well, the biggest thing of, I think, why he was successful is he had people that genuinely cared about him, and he knew that. He knew that me and Fred had his back. He knew that the staff, the university, the town of Ames had his back. He genuinely felt that. He's the type of kid, because of what he suffers from, people always question whether it's real or not. I promise you it is. He has a very aggressive anxiety disorder that definitely dominates his life. He has to manage it every day. And the biggest thing that triggers that is him feeling that someone is out to get him, or him feeling that he can't trust the situation and that it's a situation that could be toxic. And the one thing that I knew he felt immediately was that people were all in on his success and trying to get him where he should be. Clearly, we knew he was ridiculously talented, and we knew that if we got him to a stable point in his life, how well he can do on the court, and that certainly showed in the year he played at Iowa State. But, I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because my relationship with him, I could be doing this for another 30 years. I'll never be closer with a kid than I am him. He'll tell you. I mean, literally, we have some sort of communication literally every day. And, you know, he's always holds a special place in my heart, because he's literally the first kid that I ever signed as a young assistant coach. And, you know, I'm still close with his family. We still talk all the time. He's a very misunderstood kid. Listen, the one thing that Royce gets hurt by the most is he opens his mouth too much. He's very well educated. He speaks very well, and sometimes he speaks too much, and that's clearly hurt him. He shouldn't be playing in Canada. He should be playing somewhere in the United States right now. But, you know, I do know this. What I am happy is that he's doing something with his life, and I always pray that he's going to continue to find a way to support his family, because the one thing is I pray that he gets the platform that he deserves to really advocate for the things he feels strongly about, because he genuinely wants to help people. He's got such a great, good heart that's all he wants to do, is be able to help people. And that's what probably pains me the most with how things have transpired with his career, is that certainly it didn't work out in the NBA for many reasons. But the thing that pains me is that was the platform that he needs to really advocate and be the person advocating for mental illness awareness the way that he wants it to be. And he's not going to be able to have that where he's at right now. But, yeah, I mean, absolutely phenomenal kid, and what he did for us in 1 year was truly amazing.
The common theme, regardless of who you talk to, was to give Hoiberg credit for not only White's success in Ames, but meshing all of these guys together, all these personalities together. John Walters saw it all from his front row seat.
Well, Royce, again, you're talking about another guy that's a very strong personality, you know, and that can tend to rub some people the wrong way. But I think with Royce, he came in, that year out probably helped him quite a bit, to just get in the system, get comfortable with Iowa State, get comfortable with school. And I think he just loved Fred. I think when it came down to it, Fred put a lot of faith in Royce and said, hey, big fella, we're going to get this done with you. And, you know, again, Fred kind of reinvented the way that team played, because you had a guy that would grab a defensive rebound, take it the length of the floor, make behind the back pass, and hit a guy in the corner for an open three. And it's like, it was really an exciting style of play, but it was so unconventional. And just, there aren't a lot of coaches that would be willing to bend as much as I think Fred did, and made the other players understand that, hey, this can work, just trust it. And over the course of time, it did. And again, there were bumps in the road, there's no question. I think at first those guys probably were kind of looking at each other like, hey, what's going on here? You know, I mean, with this guy dribbling the ball the length of the floor and doing all this crazy stuff. But then they realized, you know, this can work. I mean, we keep getting open shots, and he's often on the passing end of those shots. I think they accepted that, and it all worked out in the end. But, you know, I think Royce was just a strong personality that Fred was willing to accommodate, and didn't say, hey, I'm going to try to fit a square into a circular peg here. I'm going to go ahead and understand that this guy's different. He's unique. And I'm going to play to that with this team. And there was never another team that had that dynamic on it under Fred, but that particular team, it worked. And, you know, George Niang was not the most conventional college basketball player either. And again, Fred did a great job of understanding his skill set and trying to work an offense to really capitalize on what George could do. And Fred was a very creative offensive coach. He would watch NBA games. He would jot down notes. He would remind himself of plays. He constantly was doing that kind of stuff. And I think he just loves the offensive part of the game and the play calling part of it. And he was absorbing stuff constantly and borrowing stuff just like everybody else does. In coaching, there's very few originals. Most things are borrowed.
My pal Travis Hines joins me now as we will analyze what we've heard here in episode 3 of Transfer U. Travis was covering Iowa State for the Ames Tribune, still there, but extensively during these years. And boy, Travis, looking back at the Royce White years, it seems like it was like 100 years ago, but what a time.
It was. I mean, those are my Marshalltown Times Republican days. That's how long ago the Royce White years were. I was still around, but just over in Marshalltown.
Excuse me on that. It's such a complex deal. I feel like we could do a 2-hour podcast where we sit here and analyze Royce White. But what do you remember most about covering him?
Oh, man, a couple things. I mean, one, start with off the court stuff. I mean, he was as engaging a personality when he wanted to be as I've ever covered. I mean, obviously highly intelligent, incredibly eloquent, both in being able to get his point across and being entertaining and being able to do it.
Yeah.
And then other times he would have no interest in talking to you and you being the media. So that he was always interesting to cover on the floor. The thing, you know, everybody talks about his talent and his versatility, but when I think of Royce White, the basketball player, the first thing that I always think of is his ability to pass the basketball. I mean, he was a savant, the way that he was able to pass. And to me, that's always the mark of an excellent player, because to be able to pass, you have to be able to do a lot of things all at once. You got to be able to multitask, just thinking of what the other guy is going to do and what you're going to do. You have to have vision, and you got to be unselfish. And that's the markings of a great basketball player. And those are some of the passes I remember Royce making, the behind the backs, the no looks. They're just, you don't see that kind of passing, not only in the college game, but you don't always often see it in the pro game.
Yeah, and it is a real shame, too, because if you watch NBA basketball, it feels like the game is kind of move towards a player like Royce too, and he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Royce last summer for a story, and I kind of asked him the same question, because you look at Draymond Green. Obviously, that's the extreme example of a guy that, you know, 20 years ago is probably not in the league, and now he's a max contract player, a defensive player of the year type player. And I don't know that Royce couldn't have been Draymond Green. Obviously, he doesn't maybe have the athleticism of a Green, but he's got strength in spades over Green. He's just a monster guy. The one thing he didn't have was shooting. I don't know that ever would have came, but his ability to play make from all over the floor, his ability to rebound, you know, to defend if he wanted to. I think it is it's a shame for a lot of reasons. One, because obviously he's a widely talented guy. Like, he was probably a lottery talent that year in that 2011 draft, or in the 2012 draft, and the off the court stuff pushed him back. And I think tragedy is certainly too strong a word for a guy never playing in the NBA, but it's a basketball tragedy that we never got to see what he could do at the highest level, because I'm pretty confident he could have thrived if he could have gotten everything moving in the right direction.
Well, I remember, just me in particular, I bought the NBA ticket that year. I think that's what it's called, the ticket.
Yeah, you should have bought the G League ticket.
Yeah, well, and I didn't really end up using it much when Royce wasn't out there.
And the common theme, too, and it, let's go to Fred Hoiberg here, and I think specifically Matt Abdelmassi as well, is, and we're going to hear from Melvin Edgem coming up in episode 4 about meshing everybody together. And, you know, I think Melvin was really important in those years because he was kind of an alpha four-year guy who they needed. But it really is fascinating when you look back on it and we have hindsight now, especially knowing how Royce's pro career would turn out, that they didn't have more problems. And these guys all speak very fondly of one another.
Yeah, I think a lot of the credit has to go to Fred Hoiberg and a lot of credit has to go to Matt Abdelmassi for keeping Royce content and in line. You know, obviously, I don't think Royce is a bad guy. I don't think, you know, he had his legal issues in Minnesota, but that was pretty contained to a pretty small period of time in his life. But to get him to just keep going in the right direction and be happy for 2 years, essentially. I mean, like, look at, it has not gone well for Royce for that duration of time anywhere else. You look at high school, he got kicked out of high school, the high school he started at, got, you know, essentially booted off Minnesota, although I think he would probably dispute that. And then, obviously, we all know how it went from him in his professional career. Like, you can look at what he did at Iowa State. It was certainly the pinnacle of his career, but, you know, I wonder if it wasn't the pinnacle of his stability in his life.
Coming up in episode 4 of CF Chronicles Transfer U, we will discuss the other transfers who came in after those first four. Specifically, though, we'll take a look at how Iowa State and Fred Hoiberg contributed to really changing how recruiting happens in the world of college basketball. And I want to ask this specific question. Would what Hoiberg did in Ames be possible to do again in the modern day? Thanks for listening.
CF Chronicles Transfer U is the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. CF Chronicles are brought to you by you, the Cyclone Fanatic patrons. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product better for you, the Fanatics. Chris Williams is the executive producer of CF Chronicles. Jared Stansberry was a producer as well. Ross Peterson is the audio editor. Brent Bloom contributed to the research. Music during CF Chronicles Transfer U is courtesy of AudioNautics.com. Various clips in this piece are courtesy of KCCI-TV and WHO-TV.